9/11, undoubtedly the most spectacular terrorist attack in human history, burnt into our collective consciousness, not only by its innate spectacle, but by the fact that it was endlessly, endlessly repeated, those images over and over and over again. Osama bin Laden organises the hijacking of 4 passenger jets. 2 go into the World Trade Center, 1 into the Pentagon, and only 1 fails to make its target. The ramifications of that attack are still being felt across the globe, not only in the ongoing, perhaps endless conflict in Afghanistan and Iraq, but across the Middle East, but also for Muslims living across the Western world who continue to be vilified, abused, and even murdered in response to what happened in 2001, 20 years ago. Bin Laden was assassinated almost 10 years ago in Pakistan, and you'll recall his remains were hastily buried at sea. But his organisation still operates in many countries and in many forms. But what about the family of Osama bin Laden? Do they mourn his death? His 4th son, Omar bin Laden, has been trying to distance himself from his father and his ideology for more than 20 years. Mahmoud Fazal is a journalist and filmmaker, and he's been talking to Omar over the last year on Zoom and WhatsApp, trying to work out what his relationship was to his dad and who he is himself today. Mahmoud wrote a fascinating piece for The Monthly about his chats with Omar, called The Artist Formerly Known as Bin Laden. And he joins us on The Blower from Melbourne. Mahmoud, welcome to our little wireless program.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm a big fan of the show.
I have to ask you how you managed to convince this very reclusive young man to cooperate with you.
Well, it happened through a series of intermediaries, and it took about roughly 6 months. I first contacted him, an obscure Facebook page that was associated to a company that I found that he was involved with. And that was based on a series of images that I'd seen of him, this kind of tall, brooding man with a biker jacket on, who was wearing metal T-shirts and had long dreadlocks. And I thought, who is this character who seems like everything his father was against? He looked as though he was the ultimate rebel without a cause in the whole story. So when I was working at Vice, I wanted to write this story about, you know, the son of Osama bin Laden and his favourite, you know, metal bands or rock heroes. But
the fact that you were Afghan must have been a factor.
Yeah, well, it was. So once I had managed to establish contact with a close friend of his, he questioned me about who I was, what my intention was, and then he said, because you're not just an Afghan, you're Pashtun, he's willing to speak with you because he has an affinity and a real respect for the Pashtun people, the tribes, particularly in the mountains of Tora Bora, who essentially raised him when his father was out fighting civil war in northern provinces.
There was a paradox for me with Osama bin Laden's face. It always looked, well, it could have been on a Greek icon. It looked so deeply spiritual. What's the boy look like, the son?
Actually, he shares his father's features. He told me one quite amusing story where a big Taliban leader mentioned how prominent his nose was, because it was the nose of what must be a very strong character and a strong man in our culture in Afghanistan. Big noses and tall men. Yeah, and height are essentially the signs of courage. So he's a tall stature and a long nose, just like his father's.
Mahmoud, where's he living now? Is he in hiding?
No, he's not. He's actually living on the beaches of Normandy, riding horses, living as a free man. He's always publicly denounced his father and his ideology, so he's never really had anything to hide from, except perhaps the Saudi government, who have arrested his family members and uncles in the past.
We should make the point that in Saudi Arabia, the Bin Ladens were an immensely influential and wealthy family, weren't they? One guest on the program just after 9/11, a very senior Saudi journalist, made the point that the Bin Ladens were effectively the Rockefellers of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, they were, and that's where Osama's power really came from. It wasn't that he was this revered commander, it was that he was this financier. He'd inherited a huge sum of money, and that gave him the freedom to basically enact these ideologies that inspired him in his youth, particularly the ideologies that were of Wahhabism that were coming from Egypt and being taught in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia.
I understand the son shares with the father a great love of horses, that a lot of the time these days he spends with his horses.
Yeah, well, learning to ride a horse was perhaps the most important lesson his father taught him, and one that he cherished the most. It was the only time he really got to spend bonding with his father, because his father revered horses and had a great love of them, and so he, yeah.
As you well know, George W. Bush spends his dotage painting, and I understand that so does Osama's son Omar.
Yeah, he's taken up painting quite recently. During COVID, he decided to experiment and try to, you know, reckon with his memories and his past and his dreams and his imagination through painting. He also uses it as a kind of therapeutic exercise to deal with some of the trauma that he's been through. But I think it's interesting that both he and Bush have taken to painting, and I've heard that one of Trump's sons has too recently.
Now, he paints images of the desert based on his life in Jeddah, for example, and the Nile from his memories when he lived in Sudan.
Yeah, the Nile was another one of the most cherished moments of his childhood, particularly because it was where he spent most time with his father away from combat. He wasn't engaged in active combat when he was in Khartoum and living by the Nile. He was involved in basically agriculture, large-scale agricultural projects to try and create an economy from the resources in Sudan, and use that wealth to create his own little Muslim paradise or utopia.
My guest is Mahmoud Fazal, and we're discussing Osama bin Laden's son, who also paints cowboys and the American desert, and you report is addicted to Clint Eastwood movies.
Yeah, he tells me that he really respects cowboy dignity, and he loves cowboy dignity, which is interesting because cowboys are essentially, anti-heroes that come into towns and villages and have to do quite evil things to restore the moral compass of a town, but in a sense lose themselves in the process, which I thought was fascinating. But I think he's... How deep his interpretation of it goes, particularly because, the cowboys were used on the other side of the fence as well. The neocons were inspired by the philosophy of Strauss, and he was very inspired by, the gunslingers program, because he believed that the best way to fight off the evil moral relativism was to sway them and inspire the masses through these myths. And what better myth than the cowboy, who can defeat evil with the sling of his gun?
How does he sustain himself these days? How does he make enough money to live? Are there still lots of Bin Laden millions floating around?
If there are, he hasn't made it obvious to me. I mean, he tells me that he's actually been struggling. A lot of the family has been cut off from the wealth. I think there were certain figures within the family that were responsible for a lot of the wealth. But once it was after the 9/11, a lot of the family that were connected to Osama were essentially ostracized and exiled and excommunicated. So he doesn't. I believe he does have an allowance of sorts, but it's nowhere near the wealth that his family, his extended family, is accustomed to. And he never really was raised in that environment because Osama, of course, liked to lead an ascetic lifestyle and a very, I mean, as a Salafi, he wanted to live in the way of the prophets. So, you know, they
and
lived
that's
on very
the, that's the way the kid was brought up, isn't it? He was
exactly.
It was a pretty Spartan existence, to borrow from another culture.
Yeah. He was. He basically. They were raised on very little. He wasn't allowed to, you know, go to the high schools that his cousins were going to, which were some of the best in the world. I mean, Osama himself studied in Sweden at very fine schools when he was just 14. But yeah, these were all just dreams for his sons. They studied in madrasas their whole lives and only learned the Quran.
You remind us that Osama had 20 kids, but he was one of the favourites.
Yeah, he was. He always wanted to make his father proud. So when he was young, I think he followed his father quite confidently into anything. I think he wanted to make his father proud, as most young boys do. But that all turns very quickly when he becomes of age. Even in, you know, by the time he hits 11, 12, he realizes that what his father wants is not the respect and love of his sons. He wants something deeper of them, and he essentially wants to sacrifice them for his cause.
And you do suggest that at one point father wanted to sacrifice the son.
Yeah, it was just before 9/11, actually, that his father gathered his sons in Afghanistan, and he told them that there was a list on the wall of the mosque and that he would like his sons to add their names to the list on the wall of the mosque, and that list would be for boys who were prepared to sacrifice themselves in the name of jihad, the holy struggle.
Did he sign up?
No, he didn't, and he also said that it was the moment he realized, I quote, that my father loved his enemies. I mean, my father hated his enemies more than he loved his sons, which I thought was just heart-wrenching, actually.
That's the most extraordinary aphorism, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Does he have any fond memories of Dad?
It's really sad to say there's not many, actually. There was one moment he describes, and it was on the way to the mosque, that it was in Sudan and his feet were burning from the sands. He forgot to wear his sandals, and his father lifted him up and carried him to the mosque, and he describes that as the first and last time my father held me, and also the closest he's kind of ever been to his father. And I guess it was just being taught to ride horses, but even then there were many instances where, you know, he was scolded for not riding them properly.
That takes me back to his love of the Western and Clint Eastwood movies. What does he think of America? What's his attitude to the USA?
Yeah, it's interesting. He doesn't like to talk much about it, although he loves listening to cowboy music, loves cowboy films, and paints landscapes of Americana. I think he always loved the freedom and everything that America stood for, and that's why he publicly denounced his father's actions post 9/11. But then, when his father's essentially assassinated in Abbottabad, his worldview is again confronted with a strange contradiction.
Now, he wasn't in Afghanistan when 9/11 happened. Good luck or good management?
Well, he was tipped off by one of his father's right-hand men multiple times, and he actually fled about 6 months before 9/11, came back and then was warned again that there's about to be an attack, a serious attack, and we're all going to die, so you shouldn't be here. So he fled. Whether he knew the specifics, I'm not sure. I kind of doubt it. But yeah, he saw 9/11 the way we all did on a television screen when he was in Saudi.
It's interesting that he's kept the family name. Many in his situation would have gone into a sort of witness protection, including a name change.
Yeah, I mean, it might have something to do with the culture, being Middle Eastern. I think your family name is something deeper than just one person. It captures your tribe, it captures your sense of place, it captures the history of your bloodline. So I think it's always something deeper. But again, whether I'm going to sit here and tell you he hates his father, I think that would be a lie. I think, I'm not sure he does hate his father, and I think it's very difficult as a Muslim and an Arab man to talk badly about your father.
But you do hate his father, don't you, as a Muslim man of Afghan heritage living in Australia.
Absolutely.
How do you feel about the son? I know how much you despise the father for what he has wreaked on the Muslim people.
And on every Afghan, every Muslim around the world, I think, is, you know, living with the consequences of the decision, the very selfish and selfless decisions that he made. But yeah, I think his son is a victim. He was raised by a tyrannical man who refused him education, who essentially tortured him, took him to the front lines of combat when he didn't want to. He almost killed him several times. I think I would be hard-pressed to say he's responsible for anything. If anything, I think he was the first victim of his father.
Mahmoud, this is a very moving story that you've told us. My guest has been Mahmoud Fazal, journalist and filmmaker. He's the author of The Artist Formerly Known as Bin Laden in this month's edition of The Monthly. I read it over the weekend and found it absolutely riveting.